You're listening to the world famous Chick Whisperer podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
Yep, here we are, episode number 61 of the world famous Chick Whisperer podcast. Welcome, welcome. It is a beautiful Sunday morning here in San Antonio, Texas. I just had breakfast, and this is really, I got to tell you, weird. I almost never do Sunday morning recordings of the Chick Whisperer podcast. As a matter of fact, this may be a first, but I have a darn good reason why my co-host and I are here on a Sunday morning recording this for you. The thing is, see, he lives in Vietnam. That's right. It's 13 hours ahead there. So it's almost midnight where this guy is. But he was cool enough to show up and do this show with us. And it's going to be a lot of fun. His name is Mark Manson from markmanson.net. How's it going, man?
It's going pretty well. It's great to be here, Scott, despite the hour, the unusual hour.
Yeah, well, no worries, man. It's just a matter of where you are on the globe versus where we are. And I'm not surprised at all that you're actually in Vietnam, because you are a world traveler like I am, and that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about world travel and what women are like all over the world. This isn't going to be one of those wonkish, techie, tactical episodes per se. This one's going to be a lot of fun. And yet we're going to talk about some incredibly poignant ways to meet women and some things that we found out independently of each other, because he's done his travels and I've done mine, of course, and hopefully we'll come to some similar conclusions, which I bet we will. But first, one other thing you probably should know about Mark is if you've ever heard of a pickup artist in your past called Entropy, he is one and the same as Mark Manson. And if you've ever read the Post Masculine blog, that is also Mark's. Mark is an excellent writer. These days, he's focusing more on helping people develop their lives in ways above and beyond dating, including how to be better with women. So that's another reason why I'm looking really forward to having you speak your mind on this show, Mark. But before we get to all of that, we've got a voicemail from your namesake, Mark, another Mark who happens to live in Idaho. Here we go.
Hey, Scott. This is Mark from Twin Falls, Idaho. I'm very familiar with being single and have many hobbies I enjoy, some of which I do by myself and some are very social. Instead of hiding behind my hobbies, I am working on improving myself and putting more real effort into dating. I know that I need to give a fair amount of time to any woman I'm dating, but I don't know how to manage that and still have enough time to enjoy my hobbies. The easy thought is to find women with similar hobbies, but in my small town area, the rare few I see are definitely taken. When I'm in bigger cities and find these women, I have so much fun talking with them, and I know I have a lot to bring to the conversation within my hobbies, and they have fun talking with me. Is it narrow-minded to limit myself? Do I need to cut some of my hobbies loose? Do I need to move to a bigger city? I wanted to keep everything broad as you've requested, but if the context helps at all, I'm a nerd, geek, or whatever you want to call it. I enjoy the many forms of fiction, and my big social hobby is role-playing games. Hey, man, thanks for the great podcast that I've listened to so far.
Okay, first of all, before we get to anything else, I want you guys to know, hey, look, if you want to write out what you're going to say and read it, I'm okay with that. I'm not Jim Rome. I'm not going to like basically make fun of you for reading your take. But I'm telling you, when you say this is a story or this is the thing, it's sort of a dead giveaway that you're reading. But that's okay. We're going to answer your question anyway, Mark. And Mark, you're going to be the first one to have at it here. He talks about having lots of hobbies and wondering how to balance hobbies and dating. He's also talking about finding women who like to do his hobbies, which he said are fiction and role-playing games. But he finds that those women are taken, maybe because he lives in a smaller town. Yeah, he's wondering if maybe moving to a bigger town is the way to go. Or does he need to spend less time on his hobbies? Does he need to move? What does he need to do, Mark? What's the first thing you tell him?
There's a lot of stuff going on here, Scott. I almost don't even know where to start. Let me just start with this, and I mean this in the most loving way possible. My BS meter radar went off three separate times, and there are three things that Mark your listener said that are very common things that I hear from men a lot of times that to them seem like legitimate roadblocks or obstacles to getting their relationships met that I just don't buy. The first one that kind of triggered for me is that he doesn't have time to do both dating and his hobbies. I think this is a faulty premise. And I think he's kind of using this as an excuse to perhaps not put himself out there as much as he'd like to. So yeah, let's think about it really practically. How long does it actually take to go, let's say, 1 to 2 dates a week and maybe a couple hours, or go out and meet some women once or twice a week? I don't know about you, Scott, but for me, 4 or 5 hours a week, I think that's a pretty healthy, normal investment in terms of how much time you're going to spend each week to meet women. So if you're talking 4 to 5 hours a week, you've got 7 days in the week, you've got your weekends free. I mean, that must be a lot of fiction books and a lot of RPGs to not be able to go out and meet a couple women. So I actually think he's kind of coming from a faulty premise here. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I think by using the acronym RPG, you meant that he had a lot of role-playing games, not rocket-propelled grenades.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. So that goes without saying. Here's my take on it. You know, I fully understand where you're coming from. The thing is, the two caveats, just to play devil's advocate here for a second, is I know a lot of guys who are like surgeons and who have these incredibly time-consuming jobs that basically eat up their lives. I had one guy who came to me for coaching, and I don't know where he found the time for coaching because he was working like 110 hours a week on his internship to be a medical doctor. And, you know, he just didn't have time to go on dates with women. So he was kind of storing it up for the future. Notwithstanding a situation like that, I agree with you 1,000%, Mark, that most of these guys are just coming up with whatever excuse makes them feel better for not deploying with women. And I think that's something indeed to think about. If you're giving yourself excuses that make you feel better about not going out and meeting women and not going out on dates, then my question is, why are you even listening to this show? Why are you consuming the products? Why are you learning more about how to get better with women? Is it really just for entertainment purposes for you? Or do you want to do something with this? You're going to have to do, like I say, and even if you learn how to arch, look, reach, and pull, and you know all about skydiving, you're still going to have to jump out of the friggin' plane at some point. So I agree with you on that. The other thing I do want to add is the opposite situation can happen to me. The word that Mark is using is balance. You know, how do I balance all my hobbies and dating? In other words, how do I right size the amount of dating and the amount of time I'm spending on my hobbies relative to the amount of free time I actually have? And I'll tell you, as soon as I got good with women, it was almost like I got addicted to crack or something. I just wanted women around me all the time because I could, and they were pretty and they were sexy and they were willing and they were hot. And the next thing you know, I wasn't going to the gym. I wasn't eating right. I wasn't playing golf with my buddies. I wasn't going mountain biking with them. I wasn't returning their calls. I had become basically a one-trick pony, and the trick was getting women. So I would think, and I know that a lot of other guys have had this happen too, when you know they're sort of playing catch up for a life of mediocrity with women. Once they get the skills and they realize, hey, these chicks actually like me, it can kind of swing in the other direction, right?
Absolutely. And I went through that myself for quite a few years. So yeah, the key here is balance. I mean, when you're on these dates with women, and you probably went through this too, Scott, like if you're only, like you said, one trick pony, if your only thing going for you in life is that you can talk to women, when you actually get on those dates with cool women and amazing girls who have awesome hobbies and really great things going for them, and the only thing you can talk about is the other times you went out and talked to women, it doesn't work out. So balance is necessary here. I mean, to just go back to the listener, you know, if you can think of it this way, if you take an hour, cut off 30 minutes of gaming and 30 minutes of reading each day and dedicate that to whether it's an online dating site or some social meetup group or going out with friends or something like that, this problem is going to take care of itself. The time problem is going to take care of itself.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Let's talk about his hobbies for a moment, which he described as many kinds of fiction and role-playing games. Now, he says that he's meeting women who are into the role-playing games and all of his many kinds of fiction, but they're taken. And I bet you I know why. I don't think there's a whole lot of women who gravitate to that sort of thing unless they meet a guy and then they find out he's into that and they just kind of tag along and find out after a brief spell, hey, you know what? No pun intended. They find out after a brief
Sorry, it took me a second. Yeah. Okay.
It's just funny because I probably triggered that word in my mind because of what it is.
Yeah.
But then they find out after a brief spell, pun intended, that, you know, hey, this is actually pretty fun. That's how women get into that stuff because, you know, Mark, you and I both know that kids start playing role-playing games like Dungeons and Dragons and reading science fiction and, you know, Star Wars fan books and stuff like that and comic books or whatever. And it's just not something that women do. And it's just not something that, well, women really think is all that cool if you start crowing about it up front either. How is he going to meet women who are into what he's doing? My first blush on that is you kind of should sweep that under the carpet for a bit and ease them into the knowledge of what you do for fun after a few dates, and then maybe she'll come along with you for the ride. I know I did that with Emily. I had a friend, I've talked about it on this show before, he was all into BMX racing. Well, BMX racing has sort of a stigma, especially pre-Olympics, before it became an Olympic sport back in 08, that it's sort of a little kid's bike thing. So I knew better than to put on my online dating profile how I was into BMX racing. My friend, he thought that women would think it was great that he was a BMX racing expert. And so he talked about it all in his online dating profile. Well, long story short, he went dateless and I met Emily. And yet, Emily was like, okay, I guess that's cool that you do bicycle racing. The next thing you know, after we'd been dating 8-10 months, she was third in the state at it. Because she said, hey, this is really fun. I like playing in the dirt with you. Because after a while, even though I said to her, hey, you know what? I don't have to bother you with this. You know, I can have my BMX night one time a week. She goes, no. I adore you. I want to know more about your life. I want to go with you and see what this is about. And because she and I had built that rapport, built that relationship, then all of a sudden, yeah, she's like, you know, I think I'd like to try this. So we built her a bike and she was all into it. And I think there's something to that. I think there's something to this idea of leading women into your hobbies, kind of like slowly but surely. You know what I mean?
I think, you know, once you're talking about a relationship, I think that the passions of the person that we're with often transfers to us just for the mere fact that it's so enjoyable to do something with the person that you're in a relationship with. But I want to back up and I want to point out what I think is another kind of false premise here. This is actually, Scott, this is one of the most common questions I get on my forums because very similar to you, one of the big things that I hammer home all the time is for men to develop themselves, develop their own interests, develop their own hobbies, create an identity for themselves, and you know, build themselves up as much as possible because that's just going to make things so much easier once they go out and start talking to women. So when guys read my book, one of the first things they do is they pop on my forum and they say, hey, Mark, this is great, developing myself. My hobbies are really nerdy. I'm into chess and anime and, you know, all these things, video games. And girls don't like that. So, you know, what's the deal? What am I going to do? And what I always answer is that I think there's kind of a false dichotomy here, or there's a false premise here, which is that meeting women should be separated from simply spending time with women or having women attracted to you. So what I would say to Mark is, first of all, as hobbies, reading fiction and playing role-playing games, those are very isolated hobbies. Those are things that you don't really do with other people. And like Scott said, that women don't tend to be spending all their time doing that. So just because you enjoy something doesn't mean you necessarily have to use that or find women who enjoy that too. I think that once you, like Scott said, once you meet a woman and she sees that you're into that, she can like the fact that you're passionate and love doing that without actually being passionate and love doing it herself. I was telling Scott before the show, like one of my big nerdy things is I'm a bit of a chess nerd and the World Championship of Chess is going on right now. It's a big deal. And they stream chess games live online. And at the world-class level, chess games are like 6 hours long. It's kind of like watching paint dry if you're not into it. And my girlfriend came in the other day and she just looked at me and she's like, wow, I don't know how you watch that. But the funny thing is she likes that I like chess. She would never watch it. She would never get into it. I don't even think she knows how to play it. But she likes that I like it. And she enjoys that I enjoy it. It says something about my character. It says something about my personality. So when I met her, and I met her in a nightclub, I didn't walk up to her in a nightclub and be like, hey, chess, do you like D4 or E4 better? Like, it's not a good tool to connect with women. So even though I want to end up with a woman who would like my nerdy hobbies, who would like that I get excited about video games or chess games, I didn't go out and use that as my strategy to meet women. I simply met women just on my own, on a more face-to-face basis. You know, you start with the basics. Where are you from? What do you do?
Yeah, as kind of an aside there, going back to what you said earlier about setting time aside to meet women. Hey, man, when you go grocery shopping, when you go to the bank, that should be meet women time if you feel like it also. I mean, don't pressure yourself. But it's not like you have to set time aside to meet women. And we've talked about that on this show before. It's not like a club or a bar is the designated women meeting place. If you are a big four man, if you're confident, if you're masculine in the way women define it, if you're able to make them feel safe and comfortable, and you know, ultimately you're a man of character, you should feel comfortable going and talking to women, realizing that, hey, all it takes is igniting their femininity, and then it's going to be on. You don't need a specific venue set aside for you to go meeting women, and this is meeting women time. You should be ready to meet women anywhere and everywhere. So, I mean, that doesn't involve any more time in your schedule.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
And you don't have to talk about RPGs either.
No, please don't. As a matter of fact, I think we should talk about this whole idea of being worried about being nerdy and geeky. Hey, I know many guys who are into computers and into that sort of thing we've been talking about. And women love them anyway because they own it. I mean, they are who they are, and they're still this confident guy who can make a woman feel safe and comfortable, who acts like a man, you know, not like some neuter person or worse, some sort of female. And that's all you need. You don't need to be the life of the party. You don't need to have a certain personality type. I mean, one of Emily's friends is just a real beautiful, sweet lady, and her husband is the strong, silent type. He won't say boo all night, but she adores him just because he's still a big four guy. And, you know, I do know plenty of guys, my own brother included, who are real into the role-playing games. And, you know, they've got wonderful women in their lives. It's just that they're not exactly obsessed with it, and they don't go around talking like a hobbit and stuff like that and being really, like, just absorbed in it. You know, they know how to say to themselves, okay, this is sort of my thing. Just like women like to go shoe shopping. Emily's thing is Sudoku puzzles. I am not going to be doing Sudoku puzzles. That's it.
Yeah.
But she loves them. As long as she does that stuff and leaves me out of it, great. As long as she does all her shoe shopping and leaves me out of it, great. Then I promise I will do all of my, you know, I'm really into airplanes, all of my airplane geekery and stuff like that. I'll just leave her out of it too. And we have our own time, and then we have our time together, and we get along and we adore each other for different reasons other than airplanes and Sudoku puzzles. So, I mean, I think you're onto something there. I don't think it's necessarily like we have to have rapport with our hobbies and have so much in common in terms of what we like to do with women. I think that's sort of one of those things that becomes important or interesting if we do have those things in common after the attraction is already set. You don't cause attraction because, oh my gosh, you like to play Sudoku puzzles, so do I.
Yeah.
Guys, if I showed you a woman who was incredibly ugly to you and unattractive, and you just really couldn't get a hard on for her, no matter if your life depended on it, and yet she was as much a geek, if not more, for the hobby that you're so obsessed with, I guarantee you, you still don't want to go out with her. That's a world-class, bottom-line, self-evident truth. Just because both of you are into duck pin bowling doesn't mean you're going to be attracted to each other. So, again, this isn't about creating attraction with your role-playing games and your fiction, Mark. Go meet the women and be a guy who meets women and does fiction and role-playing games sometimes. There's another question I want to ask you, though, other Mark.
Yeah.
We have co-host Mark and we have voicemail guy Mark.
Okay.
Co-host Mark, why are certain hobbies that guys are into attractive to women and other hobbies like we're talking about here, fiction, role-playing games, playing chess, the sort of thing that just makes women roll their eyes? What's the difference there?
Well, I would actually like to say that, just to back up a little bit, a tiny bit, before I answer your question.
I feel like this whole show is in reverse.
Yeah.
I'm loading up questions for you. So, man, go ahead and back up all you want.
Sure. Basically, everything you just talked about, I agree with. And the way I like to describe it is whenever I work with kind of nerdier guys or guys who have kind of geeky hobbies, what I like to tell them is that nerdy guys always assume that what they have to do is replace their nerdy personality with a quote unquote cool personality. And what I tell them is you don't have to replace anything. All you have to do is expand your nerdy personality to encompass a greater variety of hobbies. a greater variety of aspects of your personality. So the thing that you said about exuding your masculinity, being more dominant and confident, being more social, getting involved in new activities, new, more social things, that's all that's necessary. The nerdy stuff, it's not stopping you. It's just not helping you either. And what I would actually like to say in response to the question you just asked me is that what I have found is that, yeah, sure, like my nerdy interest in chess, I don't walk around bars or shopping malls like trying to talk to girls about chess. But once I have gotten to know a woman, once I've gone on some dates with her, hooked up with her, slept with her, and then she finds out that I'm like a huge nerd about chess, she thinks it's cool. It's like, it adds a new dimension to my personality. It makes me more human. It makes me more multidimensional, more interesting. Like she can't put her finger on me and be like, that guy is a player or that guy is a nerd. It's like this guy who encompasses multiple areas or multiple stereotypes. And that ultimately, it creates a lot of intrigue, which creates a lot of traction. So I actually think it's great to keep your nerdy hobbies, keep the RPGs, keep the fantasy fiction or whatever. Just pursue new things. Expand yourself. Expand what you're willing to engage in. Try new things. Try new aspects of your personality out and see what happens with those things. Now, to get back to your question, why are some hobbies, let's change the wording to sexy. Why are some hobbies sexy and why are some hobbies unsexy? Like video games is not sexy. Riding motorcycles is sexy, or like snowboarding is sexy. I think it comes back to what you mentioned, Scott, in terms of exuding, as you put it, masculine energy or dominance. Some hobbies, just it's an intrinsic aspect of the hobby. So say riding Harleys or snowboarding or skydiving, the risk that's involved, the attitude, the ballsiness that's necessary, all of those things imply very attractive traits about a man who does them. They imply that he's not anxious, that he's confident in himself, that he's willing to take risks, that he is willing to put himself out there and do what he wants. And all of these things trigger the right things within women to make them seem attractive.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also want to add to what you said, taking your allegedly geeky hobbies or whatever and expanding them to include more. Women really do love men who surprise them with their depth. Women love guys who they have to keep trying to figure out. That creates the all-important, all-conquering, all-powerful element of intrigue. You use the key word there. If a woman is intrigued, if she just keeps finding out more secrets about you, she can't help but be more attracted to you and more interested in you. That's what you want. That's how you become the elusive, most interesting man in the world, like in the commercials. You become intriguing. And the more that you do, especially things you do that the woman necessarily didn't have you pegged to be a guy who does those things, that's going to help you. So in other words, let's say you are a motorcycle racer. Let's say you're a high-powered lawyer. Then she finds out you're into science fiction. That'll be like, huh, who knew? It won't be like, oh, he's a science fiction geek. All of a sudden, I need to break up with him. That will add depth, and that depth is a good thing. One of the things I like to do is I like to go sing karaoke, and a favorite thing of mine to do is to master a song that nobody in a million years would ever expect me to do. Then go up there and just nail it. And everybody be like, man, that was just crazy.
What's your song?
I'm talking about, oh, I don't know. I have a daughter named Sarah. And one time we were messing around in the car when we were listening to the 60s, 70s, and 80s station. And the old Hall & Oates song, Sarah Smile, came on.
Yeah.
You know, that's the, it's you and me forever. You know, it's that song.
Yeah.
Harder to do when you can't do it at full volume. And it's just, it's not a song you would expect a guy who listens to alternative and heavy metal like me to bust out with up there. So I said to Emily, after I changed all the words to be more like my infant daughter, you know, there's a part of the song that goes, if you want to be free, you know, so I changed it to, if you want to go pee. Then my other daughter just started destroying herself laughing when I said that, you know, and it's, we'll change your diaper when you do so and stuff like that. So I actually went to the karaoke place and I told everybody I was dedicating it to my 12-month-old daughter. And I sang the song with the new words and it just brought the house down. And I sang it well. I sang it right. And it's not an easy song to do. So I had practiced this thing over and over. But there's just no way anybody is going to say that guy's going to get up there, especially if they know who I am. He's going to get up there and do honking Hall & Oates. You got to be freaking kidding me. So it was unexpected. And of course, you know, my wife thought it was great. And I had just done, you know, some I don't know, House of Pain song and followed it up with Motley Crue. Then I busted out with that. That's the kind of thing that gives you a little bit of depth in a woman's mind. You don't want to be this one trick pony that we've been talking about time and time again on the show. You want to be a guy who can just surprise a woman with your ability to cook or your ability to know about something that she brings up that she's interested in and you know some facts about it. She'll be amazed. A great thing to do in this life is to learn a little bit about an awful lot. You know, that may not sound like such a great thing to do at first because it might seem to you on the surface that you become one of these guys who spread a mile wide and an inch deep. But it really is good to be able to converse about a bunch of different things at some level with people who might be interested in them.
I believe that very strongly. And I think what you're talking about, Scott, if you go a little deeper with that, what you're talking about is simply just curiosity, like having curiosity, new experiences and activities and getting to know new people. For the listener, the voicemail mark, this is what it comes back to. Yeah, it's awesome that you love the role-playing games and the fiction novels and all that stuff. Like, keep that. You're always going to have that. But you also need to have a curiosity about the world, about other people, other activities, trying new things. Just for no other reason. I mean, all this stuff about being intriguing and being a surprise and having depth, you know, these are all important things in terms of attraction and dating and having good relationships, but it's also good for you. It makes you a happier person. It makes you more well-rounded. It makes you feel more stable and comfortable moving through the world and interacting with people. So women aside, you know, one thing I say in my book over and over is there's no separation between self-development and dating improvement. It's the exact same thing. So all of this stuff that we're talking about, like try new activities and add some depth and be more intriguing and learn a little bit about a lot of things, it's not just for women, it's for you. Like, this is what makes you enjoy life. Like, this is what you feel good about. When you come home or you sit down, say, 6 months from now, 12 months from now, and you tried all these new things and had all these new experiences, you know, this is what you're going to look back on it and think, wow, that was great. That was meaningful. I had a great year this year.
Yeah, you know, I'm reminded of that old John Cougar Mellencamp song, Jack and Diane, where the chorus goes, oh yeah, life goes on long after the thrill of living is gone. Man, you know, I would swear up and down, I think that moment happens where the thrill of living is gone for some people at like age 6. I mean, it's amazing how few people in this world are legitimately curious. I just turned 47, okay? And I am still fascinated by anything cool. Whether I'm inherently into it or not, if there's something cool going on, I want to see it. I want to know what's going on. It just busts my chops if I like can't see something cool when it's happening. Like if I'm driving along the side of the road and there's some wildlife, you know, that appeared out of the bush for a split second and I just saw it out of the corner of my eye and then it disappeared back into the trees. Man, I'm the kind of guy who would love to just park my car and go chase it. I want to see what it was. I can't just let that water flow under the bridge. And yet I know almost nobody like that. I am by far the most curious person I know. If I go to a new restaurant, I'll read the menu up and down, not because I'm at a loss for what to decide to eat, but because I'm learning. I'm like, hey, look at this dish. What's in that? I got to remember what that's called. How to say hello in every language I can think of. I love that stuff. And you know, I'm not surprised a bit, Mark, that you're so curious yourself and that you're harping on the same issue because you're a world traveler. And I think that curiosity is what leads people to get out of the safety and security of their own home and indeed their own country and go travel. And we're going to talk about that in just a second. But first, just to close out this elongated section on that incredible voicemail that had, well, a lot of depth, really, from Mark in Idaho, voicemail guy Mark, I want to tell you that co-host guy Mark is going to give you something really cool for going ahead and sending us that voicemail that I'm sure a lot of guys can relate to. What do you got for him, Mark?
I'm going to be sending him a copy of my book, Models, Attract Women Through Honesty. And there is 2.5 chapters specifically on lifestyle, developing hobbies, habits, activities, where to meet women, things you can integrate within your life. And so I'm sure he'll be very interested to read that.
Attracting women through honesty. What a concept. I mean, no trickery,
none.
No escalation, no weird terms or magic tricks. Wow, that's absolutely unbelievable. Yeah. I'm being facetious, obviously.
Of course.
Yeah, guys, you know, be a real man, own it, and women will adore you. Who are the women you're attracted to? Excuse me, but they're the real women who are confident in their female nature. You just can't help but just want to ravish women like that. They make you sexually happy. Well, Be that guy for a woman. There's no talking a woman into being attracted to you. There's no thinking about ways to circumvent her feminine whatever. Why don't you fire up her feminine whatever? That's a much better idea. And Mark, that's why you and I are brothers from different mothers.
That's why we're talking right now. One thing I like to say is you can't ever talk a woman into having sex with you, but you can surely talk a woman out of having sex with you.
Amen to that. You know, it's so true that we talk ourselves out of the bedroom time and time again. I have a story I tell I won't belabor here, but let's just say, guys, if you have a limiting belief and a woman has invited herself over to your house and says, hey, you know, I'm feeling kind of horny. Can we go back to your place? Please don't say to her, are you sure you want to go back to a house that's owned by like a guy like me who's short or bald or old or fat or Asian? Because she'll probably go, you know what? Probably not. Maybe you're right. Please don't do that to yourself. Just go, hey, great. Yeah, I'll get a bottle of wine and we'll be happy together. Yeah, you can absolutely talk a woman out of having sex with you and indeed being attracted to you because they follow your lead. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Guys, if you want to leave a voicemail that gets used on this show in a similar manner, it's probably going to be a completely different manner than the way we used and abused Mark's poor voicemail. But if you want your voicemail to be read on this show and answered and addressed by an expert of similar high quality to the one and only Mark Manson, here's what you got to do. Pick up the blower and dial the following digits. If you're outside the United States, it's a plus one first, please, because we're in the good old US of A. Then area code 210-362-4400. We're representing the 210 here in beautiful San Antonio, Texas. 210-362-4400. Here's what you need to do. First of all, no one's ever going to answer the phone. Don't worry about that. It's a voicemail. You know, you'll be able to hang up and try again if you mess it up. Happens all the time. Don't give it a second thought. You will need to leave your name, spell it please, and where you're from so we know that you're Mark in Idaho or Bill in Chicago or whoever you are, wherever you're from. Ask a concise question that is going to be relevant to as many listeners as humanly possible, okay? If it's something that's very unique to you, it'll probably never make this show. It's got to be something that a lot of guys can relate to. Then if you want to lavish praise on us and how cool we are, you could do that too. Or you can tell us we're terrible and that we should suck eggs. Whatever. You can leave your opinions too, and I'll probably play them no matter what they are because I'm just that kind of guy. And then please go ahead and give us your email address and spell out that email address because sometimes it's kind of nebulous what you said if you just don't spell it out for me. So go ahead and do that. And the next thing you know, we could be playing your voicemail on the show and giving you a cool prize. So onward. About that curiosity of yours, Mark, that really does lead us to want to go see this big wide world of ours, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The thing about curiosity too, and I guess just tack this on to the last thing I said to voicemail Mark, is it gets addictive. The first few times you exercise it or push yourself to try it, try something new, it feels very difficult. It feels like you have weights around your legs, makes you a little bit anxious. But the more you do it, the more addictive it becomes. Traveling for me, it's just, I originally set out, I was going to do maybe a year, maybe two, just traveling around the world. And it's been 4.5 years now. And I can't imagine stopping it. It's almost an addiction at this point.
It really does get to be that way because once you get out of your comfort familiarity zone, as people tend to call it, and you realize that the world isn't such a scary place, you feel empowered. It feels good to be courageous enough to go to places that so few other people visit. I mean, most people, I think, in the United States, especially, Mark, think Vietnam. I mean, didn't we have a war with those guys? Who in the world would want to go to Vietnam, right?
Yeah.
And you may be scared of what's going to happen to you in this weird, crazy country where they don't speak a whole lot of English. And I mean, will Vietnamese people not like me? Will I get run over by a car? Which actually may be a legitimate fear, but especially in Vietnam.
Yeah.
But as far as the food, will I find something to eat? I mean, we watch too much Andrew Zimmern and we think all they ever eat is tarantulas and scorpions in these countries and we're going to starve. You know, it's just one of those things where you have to say to yourself, even if it is like that when I get there, so what? It'll be a blast. It'll be an adventure. It'll be different. It'll take me out of my little insular world that I've been living in my entire life. And it really does change you, doesn't it? It makes you feel like you're alive when you're on the ground. And for the experience, it makes you feel almost smarter and almost Like, you've got a one-up on everybody else who's never seen that corner of the world you have. And you can just look at things like politics and even the news that they report in the media and look at it in a completely different way. It's really amazing, isn't it?
Absolutely. I tell people all the time that my time traveling and spending time in all these countries, it's done as much for my self-confidence as anything else I've ever done. And I've done a lot of stuff. I've gone through therapy. I've been through all sorts of relationships. I've done tons of seminars. And just simply going to another continent, another country, and being forced into these situations on my own, dealing with all these awkward language barriers and, like you said, strange food, it feels like you're chiseling a new person out of yourself. Like, you come back to the States just feeling bulletproof afterwards.
One of the things I happen to know about you is that you did a post on what it's like to be in India that absolutely went viral, right?
Yeah.
What was it about your feelings about India and how you related them to people that was just so magnetizing and so compelling?
I think the thing about that post is, you know, and that's actually, to this day, that's my favorite thing that I've ever written. And so I'm very proud of that post beyond, you know, just how much it's been shared and how many people have read it. I think what drew people to that so much is that India gets romanticized in a lot of different ways. So people romanticize it for the spiritual aspects of it, the Eastern spirituality. They romanticize the culture just because it's so alien and different. The poverty there gets romanticized as well because it is one of the most crowded and poor places on earth. And so when you're actually there, it's such a just an emotionally overwhelming experience to see all the things that you see, all the smells, all the dirt. And I have a wide variety of very, very good experiences with the locals and very, very bad experiences with the locals. And often sometimes like the same day, 3 hours apart, it was just so disorienting. The thing, kind of the whole point I took away from my experience there was it's the only, Scott, I've been to like 52 countries. India is the only country that I left feeling like I knew less about it than when I went. Like, the experiences were so intense and so varied and so contradictory that when I left, it was kind of like, what the hell was that? What did I just go through?
What just happened there? Yeah. Yeah. What did I just read? Yeah.
And so the article was very much me trying to express that coherently. And I think I did a good job. It's been really interesting. A lot of people who have been to India, you know, obviously there are people who think I'm too critical of it. And then there are people who are like, you know, you're way too easy on it. But it's been interesting because a lot of people, a lot of the emails I've gotten about that article, it's been people saying, and even Indians who live in India, they say, you know, this place is just so confusing. And it's so impossible to wrap your head around. I think you did a really good job of conveying that sense of just not understanding what you're looking at. Like, how can you look at 10 children climbing through a pile of garbage on the side of the road and nobody caring? Like, how can you look at that? How can that exist? Like, how can we as a species let that exist? Like, it just, it's incomprehensible. And then, you know, 3 hours later, you go have a home-cooked meal. It's the best, one of the best meals of your life. It's so bizarre, the whole thing. So it was an intense and very personal and emotional post. And I think that's what lent it to its popularity to a great extent.
Yeah. Emily and I have been to India also. And it took some courage for Emily to work up the desire to go to India. You know, she saw a Slumdog Millionaire, and I thought for sure that was going to crater any chance of us ever going to India. And instead, it encouraged her. She wanted to go after seeing the movie, which I thought was great. Emily, when I first met her, hadn't really traveled a whole lot. And the first time I suggested we go traveling, of course, I went to Western Europe. And she was like, well, what about the flights? It's a long flight. You know, the things everybody says. And then once we went there, that first trip addicted her to travel. And then we had another trip where we went to South America and went to Argentina and went to Brazil. And I even remember thinking to myself, man, what's going to happen in Argentina? South America can be really crazy. And we felt safe and the food was amazing and the people were wonderful and the experience was just a blast. And that's when I got re-addicted to traveling. I'd been a bit of a traveler when I was younger, but man, it was just game on after that. And finally, it was Emily's idea to take our four-month-old daughter with us when we went to India, which I thought was crazy. But I took her there, and she was a rock star. Yeah. Well, no, we took her there, and you know, she never got sick. We never got sick. We played smart. Our little girl was just a rock star. I mean, you would literally think that we were famous because people were crowding around wanting pictures, wanting group pictures with us and our baby. And, you know, talk about strange food. Man, we went to India and ate nothing but strange food. And to this day, a year and a half later, we're cooking that strange food in our house like twice a week. I mean, it is so good. You just never realize that once you taste the authentic Indian food, it's not like, you know, the slop that they put in a warming tray here in the, you know, States, especially where we live. I mean, I bet some places have great Indian food. But, I mean, here, if you go to an Indian restaurant for lunch, I mean, you're going to have like half dried up, you know, half warmed over slop, and it's going to be like chicken korma over rice or something. Over there, they have like these amazing, amazing dishes, and it's just so good. But yeah, I have to agree with you. We've been to a lot of countries ourselves, and I think my number's 87 at this point. Wow. But I'm a lot older than you. I've had to, when I was your age, my number wasn't anywhere near yours. Not that it matters how many you've been to. Like, I haven't lived in Vietnam for 3 months. I've only visited it for 5 days. But anyway, onward. India is the only country that we ever went to where we were absolutely worn out emotionally, physically, mentally exhausted after leaving that country. The only thing that I can think of that compares is when I used to road race motorcycles, we would do these endurance races. And I would come back to the pits and take my leathers off after one of those endurance races and shake my head after I take my helmet off. And I would have a splitting headache for 24 hours because my mind had been just concentrated, focused on the road speeding past me and the turns and other guys on motorcycles and literally survival. I mean, it was a blast. It's such an adrenaline rush. But that constant adrenaline rush, that constant focus that's required just to stay alive when you're out doing that sort of activity had been replicated. You know, that same rush had been replicated during our visit to India because it is literally a nonstop onslaught of everything that's the best in the world and everything that's the worst in the world all together. I mean, I had tickets to a cricket match, and, you know, they have a saying, yay, hey, India, right? Like, yeah, that's the way India is. Nothing makes sense over there. And if they think something should make sense, they'll do 10 times as much of it as they should just to make sure that sense is hammered into the wall. Well, for some reason, they had printed on the back of these cricket tickets that, you know, you can't bring cameras in. And it was like in the finest print on the other side of the ticket that nobody reads. So it was me and two guys from New Zealand and a couple of Aussies all cranky because we couldn't get into this game because we were carrying cameras. And they just wouldn't bend, they wouldn't flex. So I remember the game was actually their top level Indian Premier League of cricket. It's a very short season, I think April and May. And, you know, they just go nuts for cricket over there. And the greatest cricketer arguably of all time, who happens to be Indian, is named Sachin Tendulkar. And he was playing that night. And I was just bitterly disappointed I couldn't go into this game. But at least I got to see what the circus is like that surrounds a game like that. And I had no choice but to give my tickets away. So I found two little Indian kids who looked to me like they probably could never afford those tickets. And I just took them out of the envelope and I just wordlessly handed them the tickets. And you would have thought I had solved world peace. You thought they would literally have won the lottery. And the next thing you know, I have a throng of little Indian kids literally accosting me. Yeah. I mean, it was 20, 30 kids as if they came out of nowhere and they took my envelope and they're literally tearing this envelope asunder between about 10 of them, hoping for more tickets inside. And Emily and I were just slack-jawed. I mean, we had seen desperation before.
Yeah.
But we just knew, man, if you ever give money to one of those people who you just desperately want to give money to, you'll die. I mean, you'll lose your life. I mean, your wallet will be gone. Your shirt will be gone. As soon as they figure out it's okay, as soon as they figure out you're generous, it's like that's just a frenzy. And I mean, India is so crazy like that. Yet so many beautiful things happen. And, you know, I guess we probably should get around to talking about the women. You know, you hear about Colombia and you hear about Ukraine and you hear about places where women are beautiful and /easy. I tell you what, if you are not a fan of Indian women because you've seen the wrong Indian women or you've got a stereotype going on or you think that Indians are only like this or only like that, you go there and you will see so many beautiful women who are Indian. And indeed, we actually visited Amritsar, which is the home of the high place of the Sikh religion. And here in the United States, there's guys shooting Sikh meetings because they confuse them for Muslim terrorists. You know, these are the sweetest, nicest people ever. And everybody in India was just respectful and wonderful. And I had a whole new respect for the people of that country. And they're not all Hindus. They're not. I mean, 20% of the country or more is Muslim. And everywhere we've ever gone that was Muslim, Mark, yeah, we've been treated magnificently.
Incredibly hospitable. It's, yes, it's amazing.
It just makes me ill to hear these talk show hosts on the radio who've never left the country or maybe have gone to Paris and Italy in the summer with their wives talk about the entire Muslim world as if all those people are just deplorable. And what people don't realize is, you know, Muslim culture literally, religiously demands hospitality. I mean, people are hospitable because their religion tells them to be. So when you visit their country, they just give and give, and they're just a treat to be around. And it really, as an American, is very humbling because you've been sold this bill of goods and you've been told that this is the way things are. And then you get there and you realize, no, now I'm experiencing reality. Regardless of what I've been told, regardless of the pattern interrupt or the disconnect that I'm currently feeling, this is the reality.
Yep.
You may be shielded in some countries politically from what to see, but you can't deny the fact that you are face to face with being in that country on their soil and seeing what's going on. And I'll tell you what, every country I've ever been to, if you want to talk about the women again, the women were beautiful. Middle Eastern women, gorgeous. All those women, even behind full burqas in some of those countries we visited to that were mostly Muslim, a lot of those women are doing that by choice because they believe in it. It's not all oppression. And, you know, they'll sit down and have a coffee falooda, you know, in New Delhi, and they'll lift their burqas and chit-chat while they're drinking their milkshake. And I mean, it's just not as you've heard. And one thing that I've noticed all over the world is that masculinity and femininity, kind of like mathematics, are a universal language. It seems like women are feminine and men are masculine everywhere. It's not like there's a different brand of femininity in India or in Vietnam or even in Singapore or Chile than there is in the United States. It's just that femininity, it's not a social meme, you know? So, I mean, what say you, Mark? I mean, where have you been in the world where you were surprised by just how amazing and beautiful and sweet the women were?
This is the funny thing, is that obviously there are places that have big reputations for amazing women, or like you said, slash easy women. And yeah, sure, you go to those places and on average, the experience is a certain way. What I've found, which is the great thing over time, if you, like you said, if you look, you can pretty much find beautiful women anywhere. I think a lot of guys, going back to kind of like BS radar, I think a lot of guys get caught up in this country has hotter women, or even within the US, this city has hotter women and this city has hotter women, or women are easier here and you have to go here. I think that's just kind of more self-BS to protect ourselves, because you can find amazing women anywhere. Some places you have to look a little bit harder, or maybe look a little bit of a different way due to the culture, but you see them everywhere. I, like you said, I haven't been to a country where I haven't seen beautiful women. And I think the more men kind of focus on this scarcity idea, as if only this country and this country and this country has beautiful women, the more they're just handicapping themselves.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. One thing I don't like hearing, and I always call BS on myself, is the women in my country are all stuck up and not feminine and don't like men and hard to date. You know, a lot of times guys will make that excuse here in the United States. Oh, women in the United States, they've lost their ability to be in the feminine role and they just don't excite me and they're too hard to date and they're, you know, stuck up and, you know, real upfront. So I'm going to go to the Ukraine or Colombia or Philippines to find a wife. And, you know, I just think it's an excuse. I think if you're not attractive to women here in the States, I don't think you're going to find real attraction in those other countries either. You might find a woman who would like to marry an American guy and leave political oppression or something like that. But, you know, even then, the countries we've gone to, Mark, we haven't really seen people lining up to come move to America.
Right.
Everywhere we've been, people have their own sense of national pride. They're proud of their country. They want to introduce their country to us. They don't necessarily want to go, oh, please take me to America with you. Here's my child. Take it to America. You know, that doesn't happen in the real world all over the world. Are there some places where a lot of people might like to go to America? Are there some places where people are pretty desperate? Sure, but it's not like everybody in the world would love to be an American. So I'm not sure that if you're a guy who's fed up with quote-unquote American women, you're going to be able to go to Ukraine, for example, and wave a magic wand and all these incredible blonde, blue-eyed chicks with nice asses and C-cup boobies are all going to want you to take them to America and, you know, just shower you with kisses for the rest of your life. It's just not like that. It's like, you know, just like Mother Teresa once said, grow where you're planted. You know, you've got to figure out how to make your way where you are before you can expect to take that show on the road.
Yeah, I think, you know, you mentioned earlier in the show that the key of attraction and the key of kind of the masculine feminine polarity is leadership. I think a lot of men get confused. They confuse leadership or the woman's desire to be led by her man as a woman having to be led by her man, a man having to have power over a woman. And so I think a lot of these guys, they struggle with not being able to feel comfortable leading women in the United States, where women are better off. They have political rights. They have workplace rights. They're educated. They have opportunities for employment. And so they go to these places like the Philippines and Thailand and Ukraine and wherever. And what they mistake for femininity is girls who are in no position to ever say no to you. You know, you see less of it here in Vietnam, but if I went down to the Philippines, yeah, there'd be plenty of pretty girls that would be interested in me. And it would be easy to get the sense that they were more feminine than the women back in the United States. But what it would actually be is I'm simply talking and dating women who are in absolutely no position to ever say no to me and mistaking that for femininity. When actually I'm not doing any leading at all. I just showed up and I was white and I had money. And I think that's a huge delusion that a lot of guys buy into. And sure, it might make them happy for a little while. But, you know, like you said about a Ukrainian woman, let's say you did do the whole, you know, mail order bride thing. You go over there, you meet some beautiful 28-year-old Ukrainian girl who grew up on a farm or something, has no money. And yeah, she does follow you back to the U.S. Now you are married to a beautiful Ukrainian woman who's the type of person who is willing to basically give away all of her life opportunity to marry a guy with money for no other reason than the guy has money. I mean, it's you end up with the personality of those women. So if you're looking for women that are that pliant that never say no to you, you end up with a woman who doesn't think for herself, who can't be a partner to you, who can't challenge you or make you reconsider what you're doing or support you in interesting ways. You basically just kind of have a glorified pet.
Mm. Yeah, it's kind of like you have to be careful what you ask for because you just might get it.
Exactly.
Fascinating discussion. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. What I'm going to have to do, Mark, is have you back and talk to my Power Session guys and continue this discussion on some other level, because this is just something we could talk about probably for hours and hours and hours. For now, I want to go ahead and point my guys to your website where they can learn more about you. I set up a special URL, as always, and that's www.thechickwhisperer.com/Mark. There you can find out about Mark's book, Models, and I also highly recommend that you read everything you can on his blog, because, Mark, you're probably one of the most gifted guys at writing who's ever darkened the doors of the men's dating advice niche, and it's just a pleasure to read what you write. Very smart, you're very well-spoken, you've thought out a lot of this stuff, and it's no wonder to me why you have such a wonderful girlfriend. Thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me, Scott. I appreciate it.
And if you guys aren't on my newsletter yet, here's a quick reminder that you can go to www.thechickwhisperer.com, no slash or anything. It's just the plain old thechickwhisperer.com, and fill in your name and your email address. Get on my mailing list and get that nonstop content that I send you daily that is sure to help you get better with women in just about every respect. And when you do sign up for my newsletter, I'll also give you a special report called How to Get the First Date, Ace It, and Get the Second Date. And, you know, that's something that's going to be pretty valuable to you guys. So you're going to want to get your hands on it. That's at www.thechickwhisperer.com. Until I talk to you guys again on episode number 62, this is Scott McKay from XMY Communications. Be good out there.
The Chick Whisperer podcast is copyright 2009 by XMY Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to sign up for the XMY Communications newsletter at www.thechickwhisperer.com. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Chick Whisperer Podcast.